Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from our studio in East County. We hope all of you had a great holiday season, and we want to wish all of our listeners a Happy New Year. To start the new year off, today we've got a discussion about some of the new laws taking effect in California in 2020. There are some new laws that you may like and others that you probably won't, but one thing is certain, with so many new laws, there are bound to be some that will impact you, so be sure to listen up and learn more. Then hear about a Supreme Court action that lets stand a law protecting homeless people's rights to sleep on public property when no shelter space is available, and what that means locally. From Public News Service, we'll have a report on the killing of an Iranian military officer reportedly ordered by President Donald Trump, an action likely to escalate tensions in the region. Also today, we'll have some local news stories, including an update on the Save Our San Diego Countrysides initiative, a call for local blood donors due to a shortage, some tips on how to recycle Christmas trees and other holiday items, and some important information for independent voters who want to vote for a presidential candidate in the March primary election. Then on Destination East County, hear about top events coming up across our inland region, including theatrical productions, musical entertainment, open house at the Oasis Camel Dairy, and more. From Public News Service, hear about expansion of Medi-Cal benefits for low-income Californians and a new farm animal protection law taking effect in our state this year. Plus, we'll have an update on the 2020 primary race taking shape in Iowa, where Julian Castro is the latest candidate to drop out of the race. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, where East County matters.
New state laws taking effect in 2020 will have far-reaching impacts. I'm Jonathan Goetz, co-host of the East County Magazine Radio Show, here today with Miriam Raftery, our producer. Miriam, who is likely to be affected by some of these changes that are taking effect right now?
Well, just about everybody, Jonathan. Among those likely to be affected are business owners, employees, independent contractors, people without health insurance, Medicaid patients, renters, landlords, homebuyers, gun owners and gun buyers, prisons, inmates, ex-felons, immigrants, students, school districts, and charter schools. The new laws are also going to impact consumers and loan applicants, immigrants, disabled people, residents impacted by power outages, veterans, doctors, parents who are seeking vaccine exemptions for children, food handlers, police, crime victims, drone operators, smokers, hunters, circuses, politicians, and voters.
An issue a lot of people are concerned about right now is healthcare. What is happening in California specifically about healthcare this year?
Yeah, Jonathan, a lot of things. Well, first of all, I want to dispel one little myth out there. Some of you may have heard that the federal government has done away with the mandate that you have to buy healthcare or pay a fine, and that's actually true, but California is going to begin charging people who don't buy health insurance starting in April of 2021. So you got about a year here to do it. But under the new law that's taking effect, a family of four would be paying taxes of at least $2,000 if you don't have any insurance. So that's a pretty strong incentive to go out and buy insurance.
And Miriam, where are the revenues going that people pay that?
The revenues will be used to provide discounts for middle-income people to make buying health insurance more affordable. So if you're worried about, like, how do we afford to buy it if we haven't already, that should help with that. There are some hefty subsidies already available for very low-income households. And the good news story, I guess, here is that Medi-Cal is being expanded to cover more low-income people. And that's actually right away, starting January 1st. If you earn below 138% of the federal poverty level, which is $17,200 for an individual, for a family of four, it would be $35,500, different other levels.
There's a Medi-Cal expansion to cover more people.
That's the good news part if you're worried about this. Actually, beginning January 1st, under funding in the new budget for this year, You can now get Medi-Cal if you earn less than 138% of the federal poverty level. The other thing is, if you are on Medicaid, guess what? Now you can get glasses, eyeglasses paid for.
Eyeglasses will now be covered for adults on Medicaid. Children are already eligible.
Yeah, that's right. Another thing California did is they've expanded Medicaid to include low-income young adults ages 19 through 25, regardless of their immigration status.
Yeah.
That's a controversial one, but that's the law. Another thing on health is that doctors who provide waivers of vaccine requirements are now going to have to report to a state database. And if the doctor has 5 or more exemptions after January 1st, then they're going to have those medical decisions reviewed by the state.
And this is about herd immunity, right?
Yeah, basically the state wants to be sure that as many children who are able to be vaccinated as possible are. There have been problems with doctors who basically were selling exemptions for people who didn't really have a medical need. They didn't have an allergy or some kind of severe medical condition that would make them ineligible for vaccines. And of course, if people don't vaccinate their children, the argument goes, then other kids get exposed. They don't just make themselves sick. If they get, say, measles, they're exposing others. And some of those children might be immune compromised, kids who couldn't get the vaccine, so it's putting them at risk as well.
And now in housing, moving along, there are rent hike limits and renter protections and things about granny flats and solar panels, local zoning. What's going on in housing at either the county or the state level?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest housing bills of the year puts in some pretty stiff protections for renters against rent gouging. Landlords cannot raise rental rates more than 5% a year now, plus the rate of inflation, up to a maximum of a 10% total rent increase a year. Now, that only applies to properties older than 15 years. It doesn't apply to new ones.
And stricter limits are still allowed in cities that already have rent controls. Right.
So if you're in Santa Monica or somewhere, I don't think any place down here has that, at least not in East County yet, but there are some places that do, and this would not apply there. Landlords also cannot refuse to rent to low-income applicants who are using Section 8 housing vouchers anymore. And the landlord can't evict a tenant during a major remodel now unless they waive the rent or they give the renter a payment equal to at least 1 month's rent.
And there are also new protections for those renting a year or more, right?
Yeah. Anyway, it's making it harder for a landlord to evict those tenants, yeah. And also, they've expanded state anti-discrimination laws, so now they will apply to vacation rental companies, too, like Airbnb.
There's a thing about granny flats, right?
Yeah, the state has made it easier for homeowners to build granny flats, which are also known as accessory dwelling units. It's not just for grannies anymore. We're talking about the state laws here, by the way, on the granny flats. And, of course, locally, some jurisdictions have already gone pretty far. The county actually has gone so far as to not only make it easier to do this, but to say they've got pre-approved floor plans. So if you want a granny flat and you're in the unincorporated area, you can just go down there. And if you pick one of their pre-approved plans, you can get it approved a lot faster and for lower fees. Another thing is solar panels. Starting this year, all new homes built must have solar panels, except they put in an exemption. So if you're rebuilding a house after a wildfire or another disaster, you don't have to have that added cost, which is about $9,000 per home to put these on.
So new homes built must have solar panels in California.
Yeah, yeah, they must. On the other hand, that $9,000, I understand you're in it back fairly quickly
in savings on your utility bills.
There's a new law that makes it harder for cities to downsize, right?
Yeah, which means reducing density. Yeah. And also the cities have to be limited on new building standards they impose, which might raise the cost of construction on homes. So you can't just put in all kinds of new regulations, you know, to keep affordable housing out of there.
Now, in business and labor, Miriam, there's AB 5, which is a crackdown on independent contractors.
It's a highly controversial bill. It was introduced by Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher from San Diego. The intent was to crack down on companies that rely on gig workers, such as Uber and Lyft, and make sure that, you know, people who maybe should be employees are eligible for benefits like medical benefits.
But it impacts a broader set of people than just Uber and Lyft, which are fighting it in court.
It's huge. Yeah, it's forcing a whole lot of companies to convert their independent contractors to employees or just not hire them at all. And there's a lot of lawsuits. There's at least 3 big ones that have been filed already
challenging aspects of the law. I understand that Uber or Lyft, one of the big rideshare companies, has already filed a suit trying to get the whole thing thrown out. Their argument is that there's exemptions in there for like patients such as lawyers and doctors, whereas there's no exemptions for others, and it seems a little bit capricious. Freelance journalists have also filed a lawsuit, the American Society of Journalists and Authors, because what's happening to freelance writers for publications is that the publishers are saying it's too hard to comply with this, so out-of-state publishers are just firing their California writers.
I do a gig job in December, and I'm not sure how that's going to go. She usually just sends me a 1099.
Yeah, I mean, for some industries, there's no exemptions at all, and like everybody you hire is supposed to be an employee. For others, they allow it up to a certain threshold, like with freelance writers. But let's say if you're a singer, they're supposed to make you an employee unless you've got your own, go out and start your own business, which individuals can do, but then that's very expensive. There are some fees involved. So a lot of people are mad about this. The independent truckers also filed a suit, and actually, on December 31st, they got a temporary injunction, temporary restraining order to halt it from going into effect in the trucking industry, at least. And we'll see as the other suits move forward what happens with those. If you own a business or if you are an independent contractor, you definitely are going to want to read up about AB 5, Assembly Bill 5, and make sure you know the law, because until or unless it's overturned, there are criminal penalties, folks, for not complying with this thing.
And also, starting January 1st, which we just passed, your minimum wage went up to $13 an hour. It's on course to get to $15. What is the size, Miriam, of the companies?
Yeah, it's going up to $13 an hour for employers that have over 26 employees. And if you have less than 26 workers, then it's $12 an hour. They gave a little bit of a break there to the smaller businesses. But you're right, eventually, over the next several years, it's going to rise to $15 an hour. But for right now, it's $13 or $12, depending on how many employees?
Now, there's also binding arbitration banned in employment contracts, right?
Yeah. Your employer cannot make you give up your right to sue or file a claim against them as a condition of being hired. They used to put these binding arbitration contracts in there that did that. Can't do it anymore. Another new protection is if you settle a claim with your employer over, say, sexual harassment or discrimination or any other kind of employment dispute, the employer cannot put a no-hire clause into that settlement that makes you go somewhere else for work.
So the law aims to stop the practice of employers keeping harassers on the job while forcing the victims to go elsewhere.
Exactly. The other interesting employment law passed this year, or taking effect this year, is that workers and schools also can no longer discriminate against somebody based on the style or texture of your hair.
So yeah, how racially biased.
Exactly. So now if you want to wear your dreadlocks or your afro or whatever, you can do that now, and they cannot fire you for that.
And at the state level, what's happening in education, Miriam?
A lot. Now, you know, there's been a lot of controversy. We've written about some controversies locally involving various charter schools that would open up in a very successful school district and take ADA money out of the public school system for students. In some cases, these were overseen by districts that had failing schools, so it didn't seem to make a lot of sense. So they're cracking down on that. The school districts now are going to have more power over the creation of new charter schools in their boundaries. In addition, there's a requirement for charter school teachers to hold the same credentials as those in conventional public schools, although the teacher requirements are going to roll that out over.
And they're given some time, 5 years.
Yeah, exactly, 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about school lunches?
Yeah, there's been a problem with poor kids getting picked on in some places if their parents can't afford to pay the school lunch bill, or sometimes being denied food altogether. So now, children with unpaid lunch bills cannot be denied at least an alternative meal, and also it's illegal to shame or treat a child differently than other students if they can't pay the lunch bill. So, Jonathan, I understand that it's going to get a little harder for schools, all schools, I believe it is, in California, to deal with unruly children at a very young age. Tell us about that.
Schools will need to find other means of discipline than suspension.
And that's for children in kindergarten through eighth grade only, right? They can't get suspended if they're merely disruptive or defiant. And that starts in August, by the way.
Now, college disclosure. We've seen the wake of the college admissions scandal. There's a law about college disclosure, right, Miriam?
There is. From now on, those colleges are going to have to disclose if they give preferential treatment to students who are related to donors or alumni. So hopefully that'll put a stop to some of that favoritism, or at least you'll know about it when you apply to school, if they do that or not. Gender changes is another issue that's important in education these days. If you are somebody who has had a gender change, a sex change, listed on your official government ID, like your driver's license, and you want to get that changed at your school record.
Where they give out diplomas and transcripts and GEDs.
Yeah, exactly. Now you can request that the school change your gender on the transcript, you know, to suit whatever your gender identity is today. And that's to avoid confusion in employment applications and so forth.
Now, Miriam, you follow wildfires madly. You are always there with the latest pictures of your friends in these areas emailed you. And
yeah, scary. It's
so
really
what's
scary.
Happening? What's happening with the power outages, specifically SDG&E?
Yeah, well, you know, there's been all kinds of complaints about these outages, which SDG&E will tell you it's to prevent wildfires, which it probably does, but it certainly leaves people in the dark, without power, vulnerable, they can't get alerts, and it's especially bad if somebody is on life-saving medical equipment. So there's a new law that says SDG&E must create plans to help those with disabilities who are in need of power during public safety shutoffs, such as folks who may be on oxygen or a kidney dialysis. The new law also allows companies like SDG&E to provide backup resources, including financial help, to customers who are disabled and may need assistance during blackouts. So that might include, for instance, maybe buying somebody a generator, or now they're wanting to at least make sure that disabled people are taken care of when there's a planned outage.
And a wildfire warning center, right?
Yeah. The State Office of Emergency Services and CAL FIRE is going to be creating a wildfire forecast and threat intelligence integration center, and that'll be gathering up data and using it to predict and prepare for wildfires statewide. And there's also a law, another wildfire-related one. Caregivers will now face very stiff penalties if they abandon elderly people during a disaster, which unfortunately occurred during a fire in 2017 up in Santa Rosa.
How heartbreaking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's heartbreaking. Now, politics and voting, there's things about candidates and election day voting.
If you're a candidate out there, your political text messages from now on are going to have to include the name of who paid for that message, and in some cases actually listing, you know, donors. So beware of that.
And election day voting. Voters now can do what on election day?
You can register to vote on election day. If you didn't get around to it sooner, you can now do it at the polls in both March and November. You can also change your party registration to vote in a primary race as late as election day. But I would put in the caveat that if you already got like a vote by mail ballot, you know, do it as early as you can, because if you do wait till the last minute, you might get a provisional or something. If you've already been mailed one ballot, obviously they want to make sure people aren't voting twice.
And there's a lot about guns. We're in California with heavily populated areas where more guns means more deaths. So what are we doing here in California about guns this year?
Well, quite a bit, actually. There are some new restrictions on buying semi-automatic rifles. If you're under 21, you cannot buy a centerfire semi-automatic rifle anymore, such as the one that was used at the Poway Synagogue shooting. Adults can still buy these, but only once a month, starting July 1st. There's also a law to make it easier to get a gun violence restraining order against someone. That one starts in September. The law is being expanded to allow employers, coworkers, and teachers to seek a gun violence restraining order. Family members in law enforcement can already do this, so they're just expanding it out. If a judge approves the order to seize somebody's guns due to a threat posed to that person or somebody else, the ban can be renewed annually for up to 5 years. And another new law, if you're banned from buying a gun in any state in the union, you cannot buy one in California either. Now, there's also a penalty for gun owners if a child or somebody who's prohibited from owning a firearm takes your gun out of your house. You can be charged with a crime and banned from owning a gun for 10 years. So keep those guns locked up and away from the kids, folks.
Now, a lot in terms of criminal justice, there's a change on deadly force. What are the changes under Assemblywoman Shirley Weber's law?
Basically, police and sheriff officers can only use deadly force when necessary to defend human life. This, of course, is in response to the controversial officer-involved shootings, some of them fatal, some of them involving unarmed individuals.
And private prisons were banned in California, right?
That's right. California has outlawed the use of private for-profit prisons as well as detention centers, although I understand the federal government may be challenging that one, so we'll see how that works out.
New rights for victims of fake sex videos and photos?
Exactly, yes. Some of you may remember last year there was a big controversy where a local council member was accused of posting, you know, fake nude photos of somebody in a harassment case. Well, guess what? Now you have a right to sue, a civil right to sue in court if there's a fake sex video or photo with your image distributed. Someone can't get around trying to embarrass somebody by just saying, oh, it's not really real, it's fake. Guess what? That's now illegal.
And also, no copays for prisoners' medical needs, right?
Correct. Inmates in state prisons and also county jails cannot be charged copays for medical or dental care or fees for medically necessary items.
And childhood sex abuse claims can now be filed up to how much?
Age 40. It used to be age 26, and they've extended that now.
And a new law extends the statute of limitations on reporting child sex abuse to age 40, up from age 26.
Correct. Another change is rape kits. You know, a lot of them were found to be laying around for years, not tested. And in areas that have tested them, it's actually helped to catch some serial rapists. So now there's a new law that says all rape kits have to be sent to a rape lab within 20 days after they're taken, and they've got to test them within 120 days.
And juvenile offenders under age 12, what happens when they're released?
Offenders that are under age 12, little kids basically accused of crimes, now they have to release them to their parents in most cases instead of prosecuting them. There are some exceptions.
And sentencing changes?
Mm-hmm. Victims of felony domestic violence now have 5 years instead of 3 to report crimes. Victims of violent crimes have 7 years instead of 3 to seek compensation. And there's also changes in some mandatory minimum sentences that will no longer apply to certain drug crimes.
And facial recognition in police body cameras.
Yeah, the police now are banned from using facial recognition software on police officers' body cameras for at least 3 years. I think they want some time to figure out whether this is really a bad idea or a good idea.
And jurors, most former felons will now be eligible for jury service.
Yeah, that's a big change.
Now, smoking, there's no smoking at state parks or beaches, right?
Yeah, sorry, Jonathan, you can't light up anymore. That includes cigarettes, cigars, and vaping devices at those state parks and beaches, although they are allowing it in parking lots still.
It's also illegal to toss cigarette butts or other smoking waste, an effort to protect wildlife, fish, and people.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody wants to see cigarette butts all over the beach, and it's certainly not healthy.
Now, animals and pet adoption for veterans. Some good news here.
Yeah, I think that's probably one that nobody would object to. The shelters are now going to be waiving fees for pet adoptions to military veterans if you have the veteran designation on your California driver's license.
And fur trapping was banned, right?
Correct. It's now illegal to trap any animal for the sale or use of its fur in California.
And specifically bobcat killing. There's something that applies to trophy hunting.
Well, fur trapping of bobcats was actually already banned a year or two ago, but now they're banning trophy hunting as well, so you can't go shoot one either. I think there may still be depredation permits if one is, you know, posing a problem, but you can't just go out and hunt it anymore.
And hopefully soon, if the population recovers, they could actually issue hunting licenses with permits if the population recovers.
Yeah,
that's done a lot of work.
That's the idea. They don't want them to fall onto the endangered species list. The population's been dropping. So they said, you know, if we protect them for 5 years, maybe the population will regenerate, and then we'll be able to start issuing some hunting licenses. But to be clear, the ban on fur trapping applies to all animals in California, not just bobcats.
Now, animal testing, we're protecting animals, right, with cosmetics?
We are. Companies, in most cases, cannot sell cosmetics that were tested on animals in California anymore, although there's an exception if they're selling into a global market in places that require the animal testing. And here's another one of those quirky new laws. You are not going to be able to import crocodile and alligator skins anymore to sell in our state, although
Louisiana has filed a lawsuit challenging
they
the ban.
They sell a lot of gator products from Louisiana, so they're trying to change that one.
So they're illegal to import or sell in our state.
Correct.
we'll see if there's a stay on that. And now circus animals.
There is a new law that prohibits circuses from using most animals, certainly no exotic animals like lions or tigers or elephants.
Only horses, dogs, and cats may be used.
Exactly. Now,
there's an exemption for rodeos.
Right. You can still have the rodeo riding.
Now, privacy rights. This is very interesting, being in California where we have a lot of tech companies that are having to deal with privacy rights and looking at them. Drones. Let's start with drones and electronic surveillance, Miriam. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
Sure. Well, guess what? Surveillance by drones or other devices is now illegal in areas where people have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And I imagine it's going to be up to the courts to figure out where you should have a reasonable expectation. But I would think if you're, you know, nude sunbathing in your backyard, maybe you should have an expectation that someone can't just fly their drone overhead and take photos and put them up on the internet.
Yeah, we have the Google car, but we don't necessarily need all that. Now, personal information, the California Consumer Privacy Act takes effect this year. And what does it do?
Yeah, it's a pretty important one. It basically says that companies that are earning over $25 million a year and doing business in California, if their business involves buying or selling personal information on more than 50,000 consumers for commercial purposes, or if they get at least half their revenues from selling personal information, they can no longer sell the data of anybody under age 16 without consent. If you're over 16 now, you now have the right to ask the company what personal information they're retaining, and you can ask them to delete it.
And they have 45 days to do so.
You got it. And then another thing is that you now have the right to sue a company if there's a breach of information, if they didn't encrypt it. And the Attorney General can even fine them. So California is getting serious about trying to protect your online privacy. Now, Jonathan, I understand you've got some information about changes in the law regarding domestic partners.
Yeah, straight couples can now be domestically partnered in California. Heterosexual couples who don't marry can now register as domestic partners, a right initially provided only to same-sex couples before gay marriage was legal. And money, there's something in there about local banks, right?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Local governments can now form their own banks if they want to handle taxpayers' money, and they can use that to fund things, in theory, like local needs, road repairs, building housing maybe.
And caps on loan sharking, right?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised at this one. Apparently, they're capping it at you can no longer be charged more than 36% above the interest rate set by the Federal Reserve on consumer loans between $2,500 and $10,000. But if that seems awfully high, apparently some companies out there were charging up to 225%. We used to call that loan sharking.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's outrageous. Well, anyway, they can't gouge you quite as much anymore. Okay.
And about the environment, microbeads. People are concerned about microbeads, Miriam. Why is that?
Well, a lot of people don't realize that those little plastic beads that turn up in things like facial scrubs and toothpaste. Yeah, exactly. They're being found in the ocean, and they're polluting our oceans, and they're killing the fish and other animals that eat the fish.
So the microbead ban will protect fish and wildlife.
Yep, you just can't buy those products here anymore.
And what about oil drilling?
Well, this is interesting, too. Now, the Trump administration authorized offshore drilling of oil along California's coastline, most of our coastline. So the state of California is fighting back, and they enacted a ban that says, you know, we can't stop you from drilling, but we can stop you from constructing pipelines over state-owned lands to transport that oil. And I guess that's good news for protecting our clean beaches, but I'm sure that the Trump administration is probably going to fight that and argue we need the energy. So we'll see what happens in court on that one.
And I don't want to forget, there's something about more protection from allergies in food handling in California.
Yeah, food handlers now have to receive training on major food-based allergens by the end of 2020, this year. They also have to wear non-latex gloves to prevent allergic reactions in latex-sensitive consumers.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM. Thank you, Miriam, for all the work that you do to get the news done so graciously.
Well, thank
Happy New Year.
Yeah, well, and thank you too, Jonathan, for the research on this. And folks, if you missed this or you want more information on these bills, you can find it at eastcountymagazine.org in our news section. All the new laws that you need to know about coming up this year.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast. I'm Mike Clifford. Iraqi state television reported Friday a powerful commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps was killed in a strike on the Baghdad International Airport early Friday. CBS News is reporting America was involved in the death of Major General Qasem Soleimani. The New York Times reports, if confirmed, the killing of the general would be a major blow for Iran and a major escalation for President Trump's maximum pressure campaign against Iran, which began with economic sanctions but has steadily moved into the military arena. Finally, Arnady Al-Ramlagan reports that environmental groups and public health experts are questioning the EPA's frequent use of emergency approvals that allow farmers to use toxic pesticides.
The EPA reports last year it issued emergency approvals for use of a pesticide that is known to kill bees on more than 16 million acres. Senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity, Nathan Donnelly, says in Tennessee, the agency recently green-lighted use of two synthetic pesticides on sorghum and cotton fields, and it's likely more approvals will be issued this growing season.
There is an exemption approval process carved out for true emergencies. EPA has been abusing this emergency approval process, and we believe approving uses that aren't really actual emergencies.
He says more than 1 billion pounds of pesticides are used each year in the United States. Donnelly acknowledges there are situations that warrant the emergency approval of certain pesticides, such as an influx of hard-to-kill pests and diseases that can wipe out crops and financially strain farmers. However, he points out that repeatedly designating emergencies isn't how the system is designed to work.
I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and you'll find us online at publicnewsservice.org.
Supervisor Jim Desmond has withdrawn his proposal to amend the Save Our San Diego Countryside, or SOS, initiative language on the March 2020 ballot. Supervisor Desmond's proposal amendments closely reflected arguments of the No on SOS campaign, which is funded primarily by the Building Industry Association, characterized as misleading. Supporters of the measure include major environmental groups, which oppose Desmond's effort to change the ballot language. Susan Baldwin, president of San Diegans for Managed Growth, a group in support of the SOS initiative, says the last-minute attempt to change the official description of this community-led ballot measure makes it clear why San Diego County needs the SOS initiative. She adds, once again, we see an elected member of the Board of Supervisors acting at the behest of the building industry instead of supporting a transparent and democratic process. Supervisor Desmond's reversal came after over 70 public comments submitted to the Board of Supervisors by concerned citizens, in addition to a comment letter from attorneys for the Yes on SOS campaign. The attorney's letter claimed that the last-minute proposed wording change was unlawful and conflicted with mandatory deadlines in the elections code. It also called the proposed amendment false and misleading. The ballot measure seeks to reinforce the county's Smart Growth General Plan by ensuring that developers seeking special exemptions to land use and planning rules in rural and semi-rural areas obtain voter approval before getting such exemptions. Advocates say the initiative will protect natural areas and farmland from land speculators and developers who want to build pricey, high-density housing developments in high-risk fire areas where they currently aren't allowed. Supporters also aim to encourage developers to build housing closer to existing roads and schools, potentially saving taxpayers billions of dollars in infrastructure costs. Opponents say the measure would limit housing availability, worsening the shortage of housing, including affordable homes in our region. Developers might also opt to seek voters' approval for projects that require waivers if the measure passes, potentially costing taxpayers money for special elections. It is unclear why Desmond withdrew his proposal to amend the SOS ballot language at the December 10th supervisors meeting. Besides the threat of legal action, he may have been dissuaded by Kristen Gaspar's absence that day to attend a conference, which raised the potential for supervisors to deadlock 2-2 on the vote, which could not be postponed to a later date. Desmond earlier pushed through developer-backed language on another ballot measure aimed at giving voters a say on whether or not to build a controversial Newland Sierra housing proposal. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The San Diego Blood Bank has put out an urgent plea for both type O positive and O negative blood donors due to a shortage. David Wellis, the CEO of the blood bank, says, coming out of the holiday season, we typically see a decrease in donations of all types due to schools being out of session for the holidays and seasonal illnesses like the flu. But he adds the need for type O blood has hit a critically low level, and we need the community to help us keep a safe supply for local hospital patients. Type O positive, the most common blood type, is often needed for hospital patients. Type O negative, the universal donor blood type, can be given to any patient and is often used in emergency rooms when there is no time to test a patient's blood type. To be eligible to give blood, donors must be at least 17 years old, weigh at least 114 pounds, and be in generally good health. All eligible donors with type O positive or negative blood are encouraged to donate immediately to help save lives. The San Diego Blood Bank has a half dozen donor centers throughout San Diego County plus 10 blood mobiles, making it convenient to donate. Here in East County, the Blood Bank is located at 776 Arnell Avenue in El Cajon. You can get a full list of locations and make an appointment to give blood at sandiegobloodbank.org or by calling 1-800-4-MY-SDBB, as in San Diego Blood Bank. Walk-ins are also welcome. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined in December to hear an appeal of a ruling by the Ninth Circuit District Court of Appeals, which held that cities and counties cannot arrest homeless people for sleeping in outdoor public spaces if the jurisdiction failed to provide space and shelters. San Diego County and dozens of other local governments had joined together to argue that the case should be overturned, contending that the decision limited cities' abilities to maintain public health and safety. In San Diego, a 2017 hepatitis A outbreak was tied to homelessness. But the Ninth Circuit held that a city's ordinance banning camping in public places by the homeless violated the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, since it imposed criminal sanctions against homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property when no alternative was available to them. San Diego had over 8,100 people homeless countywide as of January last year, but the population is likely far larger. That number came from an annual count of the homeless. However, 27,850 people actually used homeless services countywide last year, Voice of San Diego reports. California, which has one of the best year-round climates in the nation, is home to about half of the nation's homeless. Since the Ninth Circuit Court earlier banned homeless sweeps by law enforcement if shelters are full, many cities have seen an explosion of homeless tent cities in western states covered by the Ninth Circuit ruling. Residents in some communities have voiced concern over the growing number of homeless people in neighborhoods, raising concerns over crime, sanitation, and blight, as well as the condition of the homeless themselves. San Diego County's high housing cost and shortage of affordable rental units has exacerbated the homelessness problem here, though issues such as mental illness and addiction are also factors. San Diego has previously been slapped down by courts for ordinances that had police destroying property of homeless people and citing homeless living in vehicles. The city is now focused on finding more ways to provide shelter and services to help the homeless rather than such punitive measures. San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner issued a statement after the Supreme Court's action which says California cities will continue to see encampments grow unless they provide alternative sources of shelter. Creating shelters can pose economic problems for smaller cities, such as Lemon Grove, which already faces a budget shortfall with 85% of the city's revenue spent on firefighting and law enforcement. In Salem, Oregon, after the city sent police to break up a homeless camp in a public park after the ruling, homeless activists knowledgeable about the high court's action set up tents on the state capitol grounds in protest. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to the homeless dilemma.
One potential option that has been tried elsewhere is a Housing First model, which provides housing for the homeless regardless of whether they enroll in programs such as Rehab First. Launched initially in Norway and later tried in Utah and some other communities, including in Northern California, the program has resulted in up to a 98% retention rate of formerly homeless remaining off the streets and has saved cities money formerly spent on repeated hospitalizations of the homeless, as well as money spent on arrest, prosecution, and jailing of homeless people who had not committed any other crimes. San Diego County has rolled out programs to help offer small sums to help prevent people from becoming homeless, while El Cajon has tried a multi-pronged approach, including funding transportation for homeless people who want to reunite with family elsewhere, temporary and transitional housing with services to help get people off the streets. But the homeless population remains significant countywide. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Goetz with some tips on how to recycle items that you no longer need after the holiday season. Don't leave your old drying out Christmas trees or wreaths in your yard, where they pose fire hazards. Don't throw them away either, which takes up space in landfills and generates greenhouse gases when they decompose. Instead, take them to one of the Christmas tree recycling sites listed at wastefreesd.org. In East County, that includes EDCO locations in La Mesa and Lemon Grove, as well as Montecito High School in La Mesa. Properly recycled trees and wreaths can be turned into mulch that will improve soil health and help retain moisture at our parks, farms, home gardens, and landscapes. Some gift wrapping and packaging can be recycled, such as wrapping paper and cardboard boxes if they are broken down. But bubble wrap and plastic bags can't be recycled, so consider reusing them. Don't put them in recycling bins since these can clog equipment up. Manila envelopes should not go in recycling bins either, but can be taken back to some mail store locations for recycling. Like packaging materials, not all holiday cards should be added to your recycling. Simple paper Christmas cards and envelopes can be added to your blue bins. But if your cards have glitter, foil, or metallic inks, they can't. If there's a glitzy font and plain paper backing, tear the cards in half, recycle the backs, and put the glitzy fonts into the trash. Never put old holiday lights in your recycling bins or leave them on your Christmas tree. They can tangle up recycling equipment, and they also pose a danger to workers in those recycling centers. For recycling options, please visit wastefreesd.org, contact a scrap metal or e-waste recycler, or ask for options at your local Home Depot. You can find more tips on holiday recycling by visiting San Diego County's Department of Public Works webpage or DPW. So there you have it. Remember, if you have other questions about what can and can't be recycled, go to DPW Recycling's webpage or visit County of San Diego Recycling on Facebook to help have a happy and green new year.
If you're a nonpartisan registered voter who votes by mail and you want to vote for president, you need to inform the Registrar of Voters which mail ballot you want by January 6th. Otherwise, your nonpartisan mail ballot will not show any presidential candidates. Several weeks ago, the registrar sent the county's nearly 350,000 nonpartisan mail ballot voters a prepaid return postcard requesting their selection of ballot options for the March 3rd primary. If you're nonpartisan and just signed up to become a mail ballot voter, you can expect a postcard soon outlining your options. So far, nearly 37,000 nonpartisan voters have returned their postcards or re-registered. Now, if you haven't yet received yours, or maybe your postcard got lost among all that holiday mail, here's what you need to know. The American Independent, Democratic, and Libertarian parties are allowing nonpartisan voters to take part in their presidential primaries, but nonpartisan voters must request one of these ballots to vote for that party's presidential candidate. Your status as a nonpartisan voter won't change. Without the postcard, you can still go to sdvote.com to fill out the application and email it in. Make sure you're registered to vote and listed as a nonpartisan mail ballot voter before filling it out. Now, the Green, Peace and Freedom, and Republican parties are not allowing nonpartisan voters to take part in their presidential primaries at all. Nonpartisan voters who want to vote for one of those parties' presidential candidates have to re-register and change their political party.
All voters can check their registration, re-register, and register to vote at sdvote.com. The registrar's office urges you to do so as early as possible to avoid long delays on Election Day. For more information, please call 858-565-5800 or visit sdvote.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This week's Destination East County features live music at San Pasquale Winery in La Mesa, a full moon walk at Anza Borrego, and concerts at the Magnolia in El Cajon.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming events, including the silent movie Passion of Joan of Arc in Borrego, Open Farm Weekend at Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, Trivia Nights at Wineworks in La Mesa, Tapas in a Flamenco show at Space Bar Cafe in La Mesa, in a Lamplighters Theater production of Agatha Christie's murder mystery play, The Hollow.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
On January 4th at 7 p.m., you can enjoy the live music with the Waits at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa's downtown village. This acoustic guitar and mandolin duo has a unique blend of folk, bluegrass, country, classic rock, and more. Find details at sanpasqualewinery.com.
The Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association invites you to come walk by the light of a full moon in South Palm Wash on Friday, January 10th at 6 p.m. Experience the serene beauty of moonlight on canyon walks along this easy mile-and-a-half walk. Meet at the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association's office and carpool from there. You're advised to bring a flashlight, water, and hiking shoes. High wind or thick cloud cover will cancel this event. To reserve space, you can call 760-767-3098.
The Magnolia Center, formerly known as the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next few weeks. Upcoming performances include folk art legend Art Garfunkel, Angela Aguilar, and the Alan Parsons Project, and country music singer Winona and the Big Noise. For tickets and the full lineup, visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or Magnolia on Facebook.
Borrego Performing Arts Center will present The Passion of Joan of Arc on Wednesday, January 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. The 1928 silent film will be accompanied by a live orchestra and choir performing a haunting new musical score. Proceeds from this event will benefit the Borrego Springs Film Festival and the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center. You can find tickets at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center website.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Open Farm Weekend on January 18th and 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. The Open Farm event features a live bird and animal show, camel encounter with treat feeding and petting, camel rides, mini sheep town petting, and a gift shop with camel milk skin care products, camel milk chocolate, camel fiber products, and fun items for children. Find details and directions at cameldairy.com.
Wineworks in La Mesa invites you to test your knowledge, vie for prizes, and make new friends at trivia nights held each Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. You can get details at lamesawineworks.com.
Space Bar Cafe in La Mesa is serving up Spanish-style tapas and sangria for happy hour starting at 6 p.m. each Thursday, followed by a flamenco show with live music from 7 to 9 p.m. For details and menu options, visit at spacebar.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present Agatha Christie's murder mystery, The Hollow, starting February 28th through March 29th. An unhappy game of romantic follow the leader explodes into murder one weekend at the Hollow. Dr. Christow, the Harley Street Lothario, is at the center of the trouble when assembled in one place we find his wife, his mistress, his former lover, and other guests. As the list of romantic associations grows, so does the list of potential suspects when Dr. Christow is shot dead. Nearly everyone has a motive, but only one of them did the deed. Find tickets and details at lamplighterslamesa.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar,
Or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Next up, we have information from Public News Service about a new California law that's just taken effect.
All low-income Californians under age 26 who meet the income requirements will be able to sign up for health insurance under the Medi-Cal program, regardless of immigration status. The state estimates that 138,000 young people will sign up, a small but significant chunk of the state's uninsured population. Carolina Gamero with the California Immigrant Policy Center says that will make significant progress towards universal coverage.
The majority of California's uninsured are undocumented folks, and I believe that's around 1.4 million Californians who aren't able to access health care coverage or Medi-Cal simply because of where they were born.
In 2015, the state voted to extend coverage to all children, regardless of immigration status, so people who were on Medi-Cal under the Health for All Kids initiative can now stay on it until age 26. President Trump has called the policy, quote, unfair to our citizens, unquote. However, Gamero says the entire state benefits when people are healthy enough to go to school or work, when everyone can afford to get the medical, dental, and mental health care they need.
It really is about making sure that all families are covered, that it's really about ensuring the holistic health care of an entire family, and in that case, the entire community.
The expansion to undocumented adults up to age 26 is expected to cost the state about $98 million this year. Advocates for truly universal health care say the next step will be to look for ways to secure coverage for undocumented people over age 65. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new California law to improve living conditions for certain farm animals is expected to have ripple effects on the way animals are treated across the country. Proposition 12 increases the space a pig must have to 24 square feet by 2022. Josh Bach with the Humane Society says the gestation crates in wide use now are barbaric.
These are cages barely larger than their own body. They're basically forced to live in a coffin for roughly 4 years. You know, if this was done to a dog or cat, we'd be arrested for felony cruelty charges.
Starting Wednesday, veal calves must be given 43 square feet and hens must be given 1 square foot of space each. The law mandates a cage-free environment by the end of 2021, and it affects other states because the measure bans the sale of animal products in California that don't meet those standards. Amber Canavan with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals says the new law doesn't go far enough because female chicks can still have their beaks cut off and male chickens can still be gassed to death. She recommends that consumers vote with their pocketbooks by going vegan.
We've found that consumers really can't trust any label that says humane, cage-free, free range. And the safest thing for consumers to do is to avoid products that come from animals entirely.
The National Pork Producers Council and the American Farm Bureau Federation have filed a legal challenge saying the law will hurt small family farms that can't afford to convert their facilities. A judge recently dismissed a similar challenge by the North American Meat Institute. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
With only a month until the Iowa caucuses, and given the circumstances of this campaign season, I've determined that it simply isn't our time.
Former Housing Secretary Julian Castro dropped his bid for the Democratic nomination yesterday. His twin brother, Texas Congressman Joaquin Castro, will finally be able to shave his beard.
I grew a beard, and that still doesn't work. I think I need a face tattoo because people still think that the guy that's running for president just grew a beard.
More seriously, during the campaign, Castro set the pace for other candidates on a variety of issues.
I was the first to call for impeachment. I was the first to put out an immigration plan. I was the first to put out a police reform plan. I was the first to put out a plan that calls for us to get to an end of homelessness in this country.
He also made waves by questioning the first-in-the-nation status of Iowa and New Hampshire, two majority white states, opening up a larger discussion about diversity in the primary. Latinos make up 6.2% of Iowa's population, the largest non-white voter bloc.
I don't think somebody should get elected just because they're black or Latino or just because they're white. But I think that everybody ought to have a fair shot at making the case. And right now, the way that it's structured, not only is there not a fair shot, I don't think there's a fair shot for the voters themselves.
As the only Latino candidate, Castro inspired folks like Rob Barron, co-founder of Latino Political Network, which educates and empowers Latinos to serve elected office across Iowa.
It's setting those expectations higher, and that matters for the population that's the largest minority population in this country, in a lot of places the fastest growing. I want folks in my community to see what he's doing and take pride in it, and then to see, well, I could do that, or my children will do that. That's how we grow as a society, is if we constantly think that we can do more, we can do better.
In other news, more fourth quarter reports are coming out. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders raised a whopping $34.5 million, bringing his year-long total to $96 million. Former Vice President Joe Biden and entrepreneur Andrew Yang raised more than ever before, Biden $22.7 million and Yang $16.5 million. Combined, Democrats raised more in 2019 than the president, who filed for re-election the day of his inauguration. But even Sanders, who's had more individual donors than any other candidate, hasn't outraised him. Trump took in $46 million last quarter and $143 million last year. The Center for Responsive Politics' Brendan Quinn says there's a logical explanation for that disparity.
Republican donors have one major option to give to. There are a couple of challengers, but he's the incumbent, the biggest, strongest presence.
Whereas for Democratic donors with a narrowing but still wide field of candidates,
their loyalty is going to be split because there are so many more options.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org.